You're now tuned in to Red Sea Radio, Fairfield University's only student-run podcast covering all things Fairfield athletics. On today's episode, Kyle and Jack welcome Fairfield Frank into the studio to wrap up Fairfield basketball's 2021-22 season and briefly discuss the St. Peter Cinderella run. They also take a look ahead to next season and talk about what you can expect from the 2022-23 Stags. All that and more right now on Red Sea Radio. All right, live from Lower BCC, this is Red Sea Radio. We're back again another week in WVOF Studios. I'm your host, Kyle Majors, along with Jack Sarasulo. Jack, how are we doing this week?
Doing good.
Good. Yeah. We got a special guest in the studio today. We got Fairfield Frank, one of the biggest Fairfield fans. If you listen to this podcast, you definitely know who Frank is. Definitely seen him on Twitter. One of the biggest advocates of Fairfield basketball. Frank, thanks for coming on the show. I think this is the second time you've been on the show, first time in the studio.
Yeah.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I called in, I think, the last time.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was last year or was that last
semester.
Early
this year.
Yeah, or was it, I feel like it was right after the tournament or before the tournament last year or something. Yeah, it was around this time.
Yeah, last year. So it's good to have you in here. Long overdue. We're going to be doing a Fairfield basketball review show. Season wrapped up, obviously. All the MAC teams are finally done playing basketball now after St. Peter's just lost, but not before you hit a $20,000 bet the other day.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. I don't know, sometimes me and my buddies will watch the games, we'll put a little bit on every game, and by no means did I, you know, most of the time when you put those bets out there, you're like, yeah, there's a very little chance this will happen, especially because people don't realize they see the St. Peter side of it, but I also had Arkansas to beat Gonzaga, and I had Arkansas money line, so that was a huge upset as well. I really liked Arkansas in that game, and that was kind of my linchpin of the parlay because you know I could have hedged it at the St. Peter's point.
Yeah,
I
you really could have hedged it.
Yeah, Jack actually mentioned that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why we saw it on Friday. Jack was like, I don't know why you didn't hedge that.
Well, so. It's a good question. I've gotten it a lot, and I've tried to explain it via Twitter and stuff, but it was hard to explain.
Well, to be fair, it's hard when, like, Peter's the last leg, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so, like,
the next day, too, because I think the rest happened all the day before.
So like, it's hard to, like, hedge, like, your last bet when it's, like, what were they, like, minus 800 or something like that? Like,
yeah, so that's the thing is, I was just going to say is, it would cost me $16,000 to win $1,500.
Yeah.
And that was actually the cash out offer before the game, too, and you know, I looked at it and I said that there's just no value in this. Like, if they stay close, maybe I can get, like, better odds. And then as it got in the second half, they were down four at half. So I was like, okay, still in this. And when it got close at the end, like, they were tied and then up four. So when they were tied with, like, 4 minutes left, it was, like, 5,800. And I was like, oh, do I do that? Me and my buddies went to the local bar in Fairfield. And, we're sitting there, we're like, oh, man, do I take that? And then when they were up three or four, it was 10,000.
Wow.
And I was like, holy shit, should I take this? And, yeah, I just let it ride and, you know, Doug Eddard's a beast and the rest of the team is, you know, they're closers, though. You know, like, if this was the first game of the tournament, I probably would have taken the cash out. But we saw them close in very tough situations against Kentucky and very tough situations against Murray State.
Yeah.
So I was confident that if they had a lead, they can keep it. You know, for some reason, these teams still came in underestimating St. Peter's, right?
Yeah.
After the two losses that the two teams before had, right?
Like, especially Purdue, I feel like. Like, they, out of all the teams, I feel like, played the most, like, lackadaisical compared to, like, Kentucky or Murray
State. You had no faith in them. I think I was the only one with faith in St. Peter's last week before that game.
I really thought after two games, like, Purdue would be like, okay, like, let's, we get it, like, they're good, like what UNC did kind of in Elite Eight. Like, I thought they'd be like, okay, let's, like, kind of hunker down, like, they're legit to an extent, but, like, they just did not play well at all.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, this, the makeup of a team that I enjoy is a Purdue and Auburn, and obviously they lost early, so it shows how much I know about college basketball. But the makeup of those teams is a very big man to defend the rim, score inside, get rebounds, you know, Eddie for, you know, Purdue. They have a three-point shooter in Stefanovic. And then they have a great, you know, point guard, ball forward in Ivy, who could be the number one player picked in the draft, right? Mm-hmm. So I saw that makeup of a team, and I'm like, how does that team, talent-wise, lose to anyone? Not just St. Peter's, like any of these other teams. So I was pretty shocked they couldn't close down the stretch because they can score in so many different ways.
Yeah, and Jack actually had a future on them too.
I had a future on Purdue, like whatever, plus 1500. So I was like, oh, let's go. They got St. Peter's, like a free ride to the Elite Eight, and then they end up losing.
Exactly.
But yeah. By the end, I was rooting for St. Peter's. Like when it got close towards the end, I was like, you know what, $15 whatever I had on it,
yeah,
can go away if St. Peter's wins.
Yeah, I
don't know how you guys feel about it, and you know, it's weird because I have a lot of my friends when we went to Fairfield. They hated UConn because we're the small school and you have a small school mm-hmm. mentality. I like UConn because I grew up here. But overall, like, and when St. Peter's lost on Sunday, I was definitely pretty salty, like, to see four blue blood teams make it, right? Like,
yeah.
I wanted to see some sort of, you know, differentness, right? Like, the Duke-UNC thing is so overplayed. I'm so annoyed with it, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's probably bad to say because it's good for basketball, right? Like, this Final Four, I didn't look at ticket prices, but I guarantee it's so expensive.
That Duke-UNC game is probably going to be, like, the most watched college basketball game ever,
yeah,
almost.
And think of the other side. It's Kansas-Villanova.
Yeah, like, two other.
Yeah. And there was so many upsets, like, a little bit before that. You know, we had a 11 seed
right.
in the Elite Eight. I really wanted to see, like, a larger seed win it this year. And I guess North Carolina is technically an eight, but
like, it doesn't really
count. It doesn't really feel like an eight.
Count.
So,
yeah,
I did want to see, like, a higher seed win, too, but I guess it didn't really work out that
way. It never makes sense, right? You know, you look at a team, I'm trying to think, like Iowa's rolling and then they lost, right?
Mm.
You look at a team like UNC, they weren't rolling. You know, Duke lost every big game that Coach K's name was all over it, and then
mm-hmm.
here
yeah.
they are in the Final Four.
Well, I feel like I'm the same way with you in terms of like judging college teams. Like I kind of, when I pick my bracket, I think of the most NBA talent on a team should go the furthest, and like it just never worked out that way until you have Duke. Like, right now, it's, like, probably the most NBA talent on a team
yeah.
in college basketball right now. But I feel like I'll always bet on, like, oh, like, Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler on Auburn. Like, they have to win. Like, they're so good. Like, they're going to play at the next level. And it just never works out that way.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess that's the reason why everyone loves the tournament in the
yeah,
first place. So.
Yep.
All right. Let's get into Fairfield basketball. That was a nice little intro there. But we definitely got a lot to talk about here for Fairfield basketball. So, Fairfield, obviously, they finished the season 8-12 in conference, 15-18 overall. I know, you know, probably played one of the worst first halves ever in our last game of the season against St. Peter's. But I know you have a lot that you want to get off. So what is just your overall take on the season?
Yeah, and it's funny you started at the end. The ending note of the season was probably the most disappointing. But after seeing the St. Peter's run, it kind of came back full circle, like, okay, this team was pretty freaking good,
yeah.
right? I mean, to do what they did, and it was totally unknown to anybody. But anyways, I mean, I break this season into three parts. You know, the first, you know, what was it, like 10, 11 games where we were scoring the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple guys can score, which came to be a weakness of ours towards the end, but in the beginning was the strength, right? Like,
I mean,
the first 14 games, it was like 10 different
yeah.
scores or something crazy,
yeah.
right?
They went a stretch, I think, the first 10 or 11 games where they had a
different
leading scorer
every game.
Every
right?
Yeah, which I was like, great. Anybody can show up any night and score. You know, shut down Wojcik, go to TJ. You shut down TJ, go to Taj. You shut down Taj, go to Cruz. Right? Like, there's so many different options, and I
yeah.
was like, this is a strength. Like, we're going to be a team to mess with. But then after, you know, when we hit that, what was it, like, I'm trying to count it up here, it's like 8 or 7
games. It was a 7-game losing streak from December to January.
Yeah.
It was like right
when
conference play opened, or like right
yeah.
around conference
right
play.
Right before, it was the UMass game
yeah.
it started with, and then it went through till
yeah.
mid-January.
I talk about it a lot. That UMass game, I think, mentally really messed with us.
Mm.
You know, to be up, I think it was 5 with the chance to make it 7, and we missed, and I think AJR missed a couple free throws with like a minute and a half left
yeah.
to lose that game in overtime. Like, I think that, you know, the clutch closing gene just wasn't there in that game. And I feel like we kind of doubted ourselves. I mean, it didn't help. We played a really good team in Wagner the next game. And coming off the COVID pause, I think we had some winnable games against, you know, Marist was a winnable game. Siena was a winnable game. Iona, Quinnipiac, they were all, even Monmouth, those next 5 games off the COVID break. Those were all games that I saw us potentially being able to win, but like first two, we didn't have our legs.
Mm.
Next couple, we didn't have a person to close for us, right? So like it just came, our flaws came more to the surface as we dug into MAC play because, and people say this all the time, it's a matchup-based league, right?
Mm.
If you don't match up well against somebody, like we don't match up against St. Peter's. They just defend the crap out of us and we don't shoot the ball well. So, like, we can't really keep up with them when they're just grinding out possessions, and we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their best asset is, like, paint defense, and that's where we get a majority of our points. So it's like, what are you going to do?
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of those losses, right, during that seven-game streak came down to, like, you know, the last couple plays, the last couple minutes of the game. How much of that would you put on the players versus the coaching staff not being prepared for the end of the game?
Yeah, and preface this, like, I always say this, like, all the respect to the players and coaches. Like, I was only a manager, so I never got to do either of those seats.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there was an aspect of having experienced players but not the go-to guy. Right, that's one. That's one fold of it for sure. You know, don't get me wrong. Taj, I think, is one of the best use cases of putting in hard work and becoming the player he was towards the end of his senior year or graduate year. And same with Jesus. Jesus was a consistent player that over time his role changed, but he was able to be productive. So they were great players, and you know, Jesus stepped up and Taj stepped up sometimes, but we still didn't have that. You know, I'm gonna like. You know, put my head down, score every single time. Like, you know, you guys don't remember this because I was in school and you guys weren't, but like we had like Derek Needham when I was here, and he was a point guard who would just, you knew he was getting a bucket, right? Even like a Tyler Nelson, Marcus Gilbert, those guys are the guys are getting your buckets down the stretch. And then to your other question about coaching, it's like, you know, as much as Jay's an experienced guy, I think he's still figuring out, and his staff calls a lot of the plays, but I think they're still figuring out how to make it, how to make those players successful in certain situations. You know, some of the basic sets weren't working. He had some really good sets, I think, they learned towards the end of the year and had some better out-of-bounds plays, some better ways to get people open. You know, we saw TJ go off towards the end of the year in some plays, and that I think that comes down to scheme and what plays you call. But, like, you know, I think that this whole program is just continuing to hopefully be on the right direction, and I definitely expected more out of us. Like, I think we finished, what, 15 and 18? Going into the year, I was like, all right, we'll be 10 and 10 in conference and be like 16 and 15 going to the tourney. So a little off the mark, but you just got to keep putting those building blocks together and building the roster in the right way to move you forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, like the Iona game, both Monmouth games, like those were games where we had a chance right at the end, but it just felt like the plays weren't even really anything that the – I don't know. It just felt like they
every
scrambled.
Every play, yeah, felt like a scramble. And also the worst, like, going back to the point of, like, having a guy just to get a bucket, like, I feel like every time we had an end-of-game situation where we get a win or a tie, it was always had to be, like, a down screen to, like, Woj coming up for a three-pointer or something like that. And, like, you can't just run, like, a pick-and-roll to somebody and be like, go to the basket, just go score. Like, having a guy like that, like, you don't have to call a play, really. Just have a guy just like a dog.
Because then
like,
once that play was covered up, they didn't really have anywhere to go. And we saw, like, I think Cruz had to take a deep three against Monmouth, right? The Iona play was like a block three in the corner.
Like, how much nicer could it be to have, like, just a point guard or a guard to have, say, run a pick and roll and just get downhill to the hoop or just take, like, your shot? Like, it would be so much easier. It wouldn't take as much, like, game planning and coaching.
Yeah, I think part of that is definitely personnel, like I was saying, right? Like, you mentioned it exactly, like, you know, we didn't really have, like, Caleb was a great leader, vocal leader, but we didn't have that playmaking point guard, right? You know, I'm going to cut through the defense and I'm going to dish it out to someone, right? Out on the key, you know, down low, on the block, like, you know, we didn't really have that slicing and dicing point guard, and I think that's hopefully what they're targeting for next year, right? Either, you know, really talented freshman or someone in the portal. But I think the other thing, too, is, like, I think Jay was left kind of scratching his head at times too, because, you know, he's had this team more or less for 2 years, the same core for 2 years, minus like TJ, right? I think TJ is the only one who had major minutes that wasn't on the team last year, right? So he's kind of scratching his head. Like, there were so many times where we had, like, you know, down low layup defensive laps on like drives to the basket, and people just had easy layups. And I'm like, this is an experienced team. Like, this is not like guys that are playing together for the first time that don't know when to switch, don't know when to help D. Like, if you see your man losing the drive, you go help, right? Like, and I think that there was just some, like there was just a gap there at times where I think even – it's not even on Jay. It's just on the guys that just, like, for some reason they weren't playing together at points. On defensively, right? Like, I think defense actually killed us more than offense sometimes.
Offense was surprisingly better, I think, than we expected this year, I would
compared
say.
Compared to last year, but I think
definitely compared to last year. But, I mean, like, at times, like, it surprised us even with how hot they could get. But, like, yeah, defense, I think, took a step back. I mean, we had Jay on, what, last year?
Yeah, last year.
And he talked about how kind of last year it was more of, like, a rock fight. Like, he made sure they had 30-second possessions every time, like, minimize the amount of possessions the other team had to make sure that kind of the game's low scoring and they can kind of get into a rock fight. But this year it was more like fast pace, have trust in your offense. I think it kind of turned into like it kind of took a toll on the defense, having giving up more possessions on defense and kind of made those problems more obvious, I guess, because there's more defensive possessions, more chances for breakdowns, all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, as the season went on, the scoring definitely like dwindled down, though.
But I mean, first half though, it was like much better.
Yeah, I mean, if we could have played like the first half all season,
those defensive possessions wouldn't have even mattered because they were scoring 75 points every game.
So
yeah, and I think well, I have a question for you guys. Like, I talk about this with the group chat I have with me and a couple of the other managers is like, and I'll answer first and I'll give you guys an opportunity. So a question that's come up recently is, what is our identity, right? You look at these blue blood, you look at a Villanova, right? They're a scoring and defensive team, right? They just do both. They're fundamentally sound. You know, you look even, we'll just point it back to Rutgers, right? Rutgers is historically a defensive team that, you know, was really clutch this year, had some really veteran players. Like, what is our, what's the culture and identity we're trying to build at Fairfield? And, you know, in my opinion, you mentioned, hey, we're trying to have a rock fight, but then we were, you know, running and gunning, right? I think the middle point between that is like a 3-and-D team, right?
Yeah.
We got a bunch of guys who could shoot threes and they get hot, and that's how we score offensively. But then we're going to defend the crap out of you and try to get more possessions than you so we win the game, right? Like, I think that's kind of our identity. But what do you guys think that, like, Jay's trying to build, either with the current roster or, like, as we build the roster more since we have a couple spots?
Well, I definitely agree with you there. Obviously, the defense is, like, more so the strong point than the three. But the only negative I'd say is that, like, we're not top of the league in either of those things. So it's, like, there's still, like, defensive side. Like, there's still defensive teams that are a lot better than St. Peter's did it. And then, obviously, shooting-wise, there's still teams that are going to be a lot better than us, too. So, like, even if we have that identity, it's, like, we won't be known as, like, I guess, like, that team in the league that does, like, that style the best. And then, you know, I guess we'll have to build it over time. But I guess I would agree somewhat. I don't know what you'd have to say.
I mean, from how they run their offense this past year and the past few years, really, it's, like, kind of run everything through a great big, like, with how much they ran to Supreme early on throughout the entire year, it's kind of, like, get your big man going, get him in the post, get his, like, whatever, get into the line, whatever, get him hot, and then everything will kind of build off that. So like, if he's doing well, then you'll get open threes and all that stuff. So I mean, I think Cook can do that. I think he's probably our best player, I would say, I think but I guess at times Cook and even Mido, really, when Cook's out, Mido does the same thing, really. Those guys kind of fall apart and have a bad game. It kind of ruins the entire game for everyone, because kind of they're the focal point, they're the kind of the spark. So it's tough to do that when, you know, your centers have a good game every game.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I do kind of agree with that. Like, a second, I would say, like, a subset of what Jay wants to do is inside-out ball, right? Give it to my big man. Let us work the offense through the low post, right? But the hard part, I think, and we saw actually some good progression from Supreme the last couple games of the year, but the beginning of the year, it was a black hole. We dump it down to him. He's shooting the ball. Mm-hmm. And even the other team knew that. And crap, he made some crazy finishes, but like he turned the ball over too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So like, he just needs to be better at passing and awareness on the double and on the cutters. Like, people just need to cut across. And I think he'll be a lot better in that way. And the other thing too for him is, I agree, he's probably our best player, but he'd need to be quicker with his post move. He's very like slow and methodical, which is great to an extent, but sometimes it's too slow and predictable.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've mentioned before in this show, like, when we watch, you can see, like, when the double's coming, Supreme has guys open, like, whether it's on the three-point line or cutting across the middle, like, it's just getting his eyes up and, like, not initially just deferring to getting a shot once he gets the ball. It's like, you can either pass or shoot out of that post-up, but you don't have to get a whole move off. And we noticed, like, when he was doing well, like, teams, like, from the start of the game even, were sending doubles right away to him. Like, he could, if he was better at passing, he could have done that all game, just constantly get in the post, double, kick it out to a three-point shooter, kick it to a guy cutting. Like, it could have expanded the offense so much.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think he'll learn on that. I mean, he's a building block. I think Jalen Leach, if he could stay healthy, is a building block. And I think TJ Long is a building block.
Oh, yeah.
Those are three guys. They should be starting, or the first man off the bench type guys, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, we love Jalen. I mean, when he's healthy, we always keep an eye out for him. And when he was playing with TJ,
he was looking better.
Was the Quinnipiac game? that he played with TJ, and they looked great off the bench. Like, they were coming off the bench. Like, I guess, like, it was him and TJ for Caleb and Taj usually.
Yeah.
And they played well. They played great off each other because they're both great shooters.
You look at his size. Like, I said this from the beginning of the year to one of my friends. It's like, he looks like a Villanova guard. Like, he's got the body.
No, yeah, he's
like 6'4 and solid, right? Like, he's got the physical tools to be a really good player.
That's,
and,
that's one of the things we say.
Like,
about
Caleb wishy has is that had that body, right? Yeah. You know, like,
One of the things we say is, like,
he looks like a
once you go to the games and you see Jalen in person, he looks a lot bigger in person, too, than on TV.
And he's, like, smooth with his moves, like, smooth with his jumper. Like, all everything looks smooth with him.
Well, listen, like, I think he could be a great scorer, and I think he could be a great guard. I think it would be valuable to have him not be the ball handler, though. Like, I think he could do it, but, like, as a backup role or as, like, a secondary ball handler on the floor and having a main point guard, I think he'd really thrive. And I think Jay was had his hands tied a little bit last year with lack of point guard play and had to play him at the point guard position a little bit. And he did fine, but I think next year if we can have that go-to guy to play alongside him, that would help a lot.
Yeah, so we got a few more minutes before we got to let you go, and there's kind of, like, two segments, I guess I'd say, I want to cover with you before you go. So, first of all, so both looking at next year, obviously. First of all, on the team now, the players returning, who's kind of like the ones, and you mentioned a little bit, who are the ones you kind of more so excited about? And then who are the players that you think either need some work or maybe are going to get kind of left behind in the shuffle?
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Caleb's not like just for the general audience, like Caleb's not coming back. He's graduating or going on to continue his academics. And then, I saw Christian Sivas, our backup point guard, or backup point guard, is leaving too. And I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't wish anybody to leave or not. But, you know, with the craziness of the portal these days, we could have another open spot or two. And, you know, I would guess at least maybe one more, but who knows? But anyways, in the current roster, you know, I expect next year, I expect Cook to make that next jump. I think he was fringe all-MAC guy this year. I mean, when you're a 10-8 guy, you're pretty close, right? So what we were talking about before, working, passing out of the post, you know, hitting his free throws, playing a little bit quicker down in the post moves, I think those things, and maybe even developing like a elbow jumper or something, right? If he's trying to break the zone and he's at the free throw line, if he can knock down an elbow jumper, that'd be great. So I think he can hopefully make that next step and be our centerpiece. You know, you look at someone like, I'm just going down from the points per game totals, you know, Jake Wojcik. He's someone who I'm hoping he comes back next year. He technically, I think, should have graduated this year. I don't know the status of that, but that's someone that I'm not wishing him to leave at all. I think he's a great athlete. I think he's a great person. I think he's a good scorer for the team. But I think if he stays, he's someone to look out for in a Cruz-type role, right? When Jay came here and developed the roster, Jesus knew his role. Like, he wasn't this go-to starting player anymore. And I think if Jake can understand either you're starting and we need these other guys to develop around you, or you're going to be the first man off the bench and you're going to be our spark and you're going to score for us, I think that's a good position for him. And if he can understand that and be okay with that, I think he could be a good asset to the team next year. I'm just a little worried because – I mean, if you're looking at a chart from the beginning to the end of the year, it doesn't look good for him personally.
Yeah, and also, like, I know a lot of people online noted that, like, he's the type of player that if he's not playing well, you'll see him, like, kind of with his head down.
Yep.
So do you think he kind of has it in him personally to be more of that team player that Cruz was?
I mean, I by no means. I mean, if you play the sport, you know, there obviously are some people who aren't team players, but most of the time you care about your guys. You know, this is a job for them, right? These student-athletes are doing – you know, basically working a full-time job of being a basketball player. So, like, this is their life, and they care about it. I mean, maybe his body language isn't great at times. I don't disagree. But to defend the kid, I think he has the ability to find a role and be good in that role. And it just takes coaching. It takes mentoring. It takes someone letting him know he doesn't have to be the center because, you know, a lot of these guys, when they come out of high school, they're the guy, right? And then you make the big pawns, like, bigger and you're not as big of the guy anymore and you gotta just figure it out. So hopefully he can figure out his role next year.
Yeah, and obviously after the season he had the year before for us, we kind of not just us, but I feel like everyone kind of had like high expectations for him.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Him to be that scorer that you talked about earlier, and it didn't really work out that way this year, so maybe that kind of played into it as well. Maybe the expectations were just a little too high for him.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if he comes back. I mean, I think you know, the next one to look out for is going to be TJ. Just going down the list here, and you know, TJ has shown flashes. I think there's a combination of two things on the coaching staff and on him that, like, didn't, you know, I saw some of the boards and texting some other people around the team that, like, were really upset that he didn't get more playing time. And I don't blame coach. Like, Jay's a very, like, you earned your keep, right? You know, you work hard in practice. You're an upperclassman. You earn your keep. You get your minutes. TJ was newer. I don't think he, like, he trusted him a little bit off the jump because he could shoot the ball, but I think his turnover problems kept him off the floor a little bit. So I'd like to see him clean up some of his decision-making, because honestly, he might be one of the best passers on the team. Like, he made some really good passes during the year. So if he can clean up some of the turnovers and just continue to take smart shots and drive to the basket, like, he seemed to be pretty good at finishing too.
Yeah.
You know, he could do good. I think underratedly, he's actually a really good defender. I've seen him on ball with some good players, and he's D'd them up pretty hard, and he seems to get gassed a little, so maybe a little bit more conditioning-wise too, but he's going to be a go-to guy next year for sure, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know. We're big fans of TJ. I actually want to have him on the podcast at some point this spring, but yeah, I agree with you. He's very fearless. I mean, we saw him, you know, drive in and finish against players like Watson.
Yeah, even the first game of the year. First action ever in college.
Yeah.
So we've been big fans of his. I was a little upset at times when he didn't get playing time after, like, I think, what was it, the Monmouth game, the second Monmouth game where he had a huge game, and then the following game against Siena, he didn't have as much playing time, and that was kind of like a poor game. We lost that game. So there were times where I was like, why isn't he getting minutes after a huge game? But I guess after hearing your, you know, explanation of it, it does make a little bit of sense. He did have a little bit of inconsistency shooting at times, too, as well. He did have some off nights. So, you know, I guess I understand, you know, where you're coming from there.
Yep. And then these next two guys all kind of group together in Mido and Allen Jean Rose, because, you know, it's Jay's first recruiting class. Kind of took a flyer on two very athletic guys who were projects, right? And I guess, what, next year they'll be seniors, or – they have two more years? I'm trying to remember.
I think Mido's
Mido's going to be a senior.
Oh, Mido's going to be a senior?
Yeah.
So, but, like, is it his last year, or does he have
two? I say technically have two because of COVID.
I believe he has two, right?
Because of COVID.
I think he has two.
Okay, so he'll have two. Anyways, I mean, regardless, if they're going to be seniors next year, like, I just expected these guys to be, like, more dominant than they are. Like, Allen had such a dominant game when Jake had his, you know, couple games out or whatever it was going on. And, you know, he played so well. He was so aggressive and got to the rim and the Euro step and the spin move. I was like, God, we might have something right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that too, because it was like then later on in the season, he was still getting minutes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like he was doing those things and just missing the shot. Like, he couldn't.
He went back to.
He just wasn't even taking those risks anymore. And that was like our issue. It was like, why aren't you even trying to be that same player that you were at that point in the year? So
yeah, I mean, honestly, like, he's so athletic. He's a pretty good finisher around the rim. If I'm him this summer, I'm in the gym taking 100 three-pointers a day. I don't know if you saw some of his three-pointers. You know, short and stuff. Just needs to work on some mechanics, but he has a pretty good form. So I would have him just work on his outside game a little bit more. Even like a one dribble pull-up, right, two-pointer. Something that's not like, hey, I have to get to the rim and score, right? So for him, I hope he takes a good jump, but, like, I'm kind of okay with these guys in the middle of the roster just continuing being really good role players off the bench. Like, Allen's going to come in, get some boards, play athletic, defend one of your best, like, two guards, three guards type guys. And Chris is going to come out there and be a rim protector, which, you know, Supreme actually showed some blocking ability down the stretch. But, you know, Chris is obviously more of a rim protector, athletic freak, like, going to get a lob kind of guy. And if he just continues to be more solid, put on weight, I think he could be a solid role player too. I'm not really expecting them to make a jump to, like, be a full-blown, hey, you're my one and only starter next year, right? That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, we've always had faith in Mido, and sometimes it's just, like, he doesn't have much in the offensive end that, like, he comes kind of like a liability in offense, because, I mean, he can finish. He's athletic. He's probably the most athletic guy on the team almost. But, like, they try to run him like he's Cook, and we give him post-up opportunities, and, like, he kind of just doesn't have that kind of game to him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, possessions kind of go by the wayside when he gets the ball in the post and tries to, like, do a post move or do something with it.
Yeah.
For me, it's always been about aggression with him, too. Like, similar to what we just talked about with Allen. You look back to, like, last year against Iona, right? That game we won where he had, like, I don't know, he might have led the team in scoring or whatever. When he has, like, that aggression to go to the rim and really, like, finish, whether it be dunking or whatever, he plays really well, but I don't see him play with that aggression offensively all the time. So
right.
I would like to see him be maybe more confident as he gets older, mm-hmm. being more aggressive, but that's my take on him.
Yeah, and then I guess the last two I'd probably bring up here at the bottom of the list is probably, because we already talked about Leach, is Willis. I mean, I see Cook and Makai Willis being kind of like hand-in-hand trade-off centers next year. I know he had a little bit of a knee issue last year that held him out, and they wanted to redshirt him, so they got an extra year out of him. But I could see him and Cook kind of trading the five position, and like when Cook's out, you know, maybe like a 25 to versus
15.
You know, what is it, 15 split or something like that, to try to like aid Cook, because I think he's a really, I mean, he's a huge guy, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, his body's there. It's just about methodical movement, increasing his athleticism to like be active around the rim, protecting the post kind of thing. So I could see him making a jump. And then the guy that I kind of scratched my head over is Zach a little bit. I think he's a great shooter, another mm-hmm. streaky guy, but like, he's got such a big body, man. Like, Zach could post up every time and have a pretty good shot at things, right? Like, I've seen a couple posts from the games, and I'm like, where did this come from? Like, do this more often, right? Like, you're 6'9", and you're a solid dude. Like, mm-hmm. you know, use the stretch four position as a benefit. Don't just always be the stretch side of the stretch four, right?
We rarely see him go inside the three-point yeah. line.
Right,
offense.
Exactly. So, like, and listen, you know, someone like, he tries to model his game over at, like, Jacob Riccioni on Quinnipiac, and that's fine and good, but like, I think he needs to be more than that for us. We have enough 3-point shooters on the other side, and to have it as a fourth option at 3-point shooting, that's great, but I just think he needs to continue to improve his defense and not just trying to take the charge every time. I mean, charges are great, but
he does love his charges.
Yeah. I know, right? And then I think he just needs to work on his inside post moves and actually doing them in a game, real game, and instead of just taking the three.
Yeah, and that could open up a lot of playing time for him too, because like during the season, if he wasn't shooting well from three, because you mentioned he's streaky, you kind of just saw him pretty much come out of the game for pretty much the rest of the game.
Yeah, you see him start and get like what 12 minutes a game sometimes. Like,
but if he wasn't hitting a shot, that's what I mean, like, putting him back in pretty much.
I mean,
so.
He's a young guy too. I think he's got like 2 years left or something, right? So like, I mean, most of these guys we're talking about, like, I can't even pick one that's like next year's or last year. I mean, I guess Wojcik is the only one, right?
Yeah,
like,
Woj.
So like, all these guys have multiple years. I just don't want to continue the streak of like last year turned into this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the next couple years are just the same, these guys on the current roster are going to have to make a huge jump. Or, you know, obviously we have a couple openings right now. Maybe that's a good segue for the next part. But we're going to have to bring in some other guys to be go-to guys.
Yeah, so I know we're running a little over 3:30 here.
No,
but,
you're good.
If you want to talk about the future, whether it be guys we're bringing in or what you'd like to see in the portal, I guess you can open up that.
Definitely. So, yeah, we have two guys committed, signed letters right now, as I know. Ant Davis Jr. out of Virginia. He's listed as a guard. He's more of like a wing guard, like a three-man. He's like 6'5". Pretty bouncy, slasher. Seems like he could shoot the ball all right, but he's probably more of like the finisher around the rim. So I'm hoping he can come in and just be like, he seems very aggressive, very gritty. So like, I'm hoping he could be a guy who just says F it and just, you know, puts his head down, goes to the rim, tries to finish, go through contact kind of thing. So I'm hoping he can, I think he's pretty talented. So I hope he can contribute right away. And then another guy coming in that's signed is Mike Rogan. And he's, I think he's like 6'7", but he was like a 6'2 guard like 2 or 3 years ago. So he grew like 5 inches. So he's really got a guard mentality in a wings body now, right? Knockdown 3-point shooter. So we got another guy who can score coming in. I think he's going to play a little bit more outside of the perimeter, which kind of like leans into basically our whole team right now. And I'll talk about that in a sec. But like, I think I've heard he's a hard worker. I've heard he's a really good shooter, fundamentally sound. So he probably will get some playing time off the jump, I would think. I could see him playing a similar role like TJ this year. Like, hey, you're not going to get 25 minutes a game, but you'll have a solid 15, and you might average like 5 or 6, which is pretty damn good, you know?
Yeah, I see his stats getting retweeted on Twitter too, and he's been dropping like 30.
And I mean, having that size jump like that late in your high school career, like, that hopefully keeps those handles he had as a 6'2 guard, and then he becomes like a demigod almost. Like, having like that size with those handles, like, you rarely see that in the MAC, like having guys that big be able to handle the ball like that.
Definitely.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and then the other open switch, so that's two open spots. We have two more open spots, and the one that's kind of like in flux that I haven't heard anything about it, and I'm not sure what's going on, but we had a guy verbal commit from Northwestern Catholic up in the Hartford area, Matt Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Had some pretty big offers. I want to say Rutgers, Georgetown, you know, a couple other A-10 schools, I think UMass and those type of schools offered. He committed to us, I think, in the fall, and he was technically a senior in high school this year, but he announced he was going to post-grad at St. Thomas More for and go to 2023, and it was all in flux of if a spot's open or not. Now, he's a pretty good player, really good shooter. Like, probably would be like a more of a guard than TJ. Like, TJ's a little bit bigger, and a little bit. He's probably a little bit more athletic. But he'd be another guy, good guy to bring on. I just don't know if they want him to post grad, which gets a little worrisome because if he has a good year, only a verbal.
Yeah,
you know. So I don't know if coach is thinking let's bring him on now or maybe bulk him up a little. He's not like the most built college ready guy. I always err on the side of post-grad. I think I was looking through Twitter last night, just randomly looking at basketball stats, and last year's draft for NBA, like 21 of the 32 guys did a post-grad year at prep school. So, like, it shows you that that extra year of development helps a lot,
yeah.
Right? So I'd like to see him get another year of development and bring in, ideally, if we have two spots, I'd like to bring in a playmaking point guard, whether that be a freshman who's very talented or someone who is a veteran. And I don't see Jay targeting guys who are one and dones, like the graduate year guys. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying to build a program and build like a chemistry and a team. Like that one and done doesn't always – I mean, look at – not to like knock Iona because they had an unreal regular season. But like they had all these one and dones that were great talents. But then they get beat by a Rider who had a bunch of guys who were there for a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, St. Peter's has a bunch of guys who are there for a few years, right? So, like, I think he'd probably look to the portal for, like, a guy who has, like, 2 or 3 years left so at least he can continue to develop the program. And then, I mean, I keep yelling about this all over the boards, but we need a power forward. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, Chris can fill the role next to Supreme a little bit. Zach can fill the role just a little bit. But, like, we need, like, Malik Green from Canisius or like Dylan Van Eyck from Iona. We need someone who can rebound the ball, play defense as like a 6'7 to 6'8 guy, maybe even 6'6, but he can shoot the three and he can dish the ball, right? Like we need someone in that stature. I think honestly, besides point guard, that's our biggest need next year.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had problems with like they've played Maido and Cook together sometimes this year, a lot more last year, but a little bit this year towards the end of the year, and like I despise those lineups with those two playing together. I like both of them separately, but when they play together, it just like the court gets so much smaller,
yeah.
Like all that stuff. Like they need like a legitimate four outs behind Chrysler. Like Chrysler can do it a little bit, but like someone else.
I think he's a solid option off the bench as a four man to come hit a three, or if he works on his post game, get a little bit inside too. But we need that guy who's gonna facilitate too at a forward position, right? When you had Chris and Supreme out there. You're besides 8 foot and in, what do you have?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you have like, three guys outside of the paint that can do anything.
Yeah, yeah, like, so I personally think we need someone who's like a built up wing who can play there. Like, when I was here, we had a guy, Mo Barrow. He's 6'6. Even if he was 6'6, he might have even been 6'5. He wasn't big at all. And rebounded the crap out of the ball, knew how to finish around the rim. Could knock down a three if you need it, right? Like, that's the kind of guy we need.
Someone that can do it all, really.
Yeah.
Like just someone that can, like, can mesh together the whole lineup. Because like
basically, a guy, if he was, like, 6'10", would be Kentucky starting line. You know? But he's 6'6 instead, and he's on Fairfield, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even Monmouth had, like, what you just mentioned, like, they had some of those, like, one-year guys, and it didn't work out for them either.
Yeah, Monmouth too, yeah.
I mean, also, it comes back to haunt you when you don't win your conference tournament. Now you have to basically replace three of your top four scorers or whatever Iona had leaving now outside of the graduates. Like, having those mercenaries come to your school for 1 year, it makes it hard.
You're kind of all in for that year.
Yeah, you're all in for that year, and it's hard to consistently do that every year. I mean, if there's someone to do it, it's Patino, but it's hard to do that every single year and get those great commits, those great transfers.
I think there's two things that we hopefully have going for us, and I'll leave you guys with this for next year and beyond. One is obviously the arena. Like, there's no chance that we don't have some of the best facilities to recruit really good players. We have a beautiful campus, beautiful basketball facilities. there's no reason why we can't get guys at mid-major level.
Yeah, we won all those St. Peter's memes when they were beating Kentucky. It's like comparing the two arenas.
Oh, my God. I mean, listen, like, the only thing we're missing is success, right? Like, I'd love to get an 18-21 season next year and start to build off that, right? Like, that's how you actually get some momentum. But regardless, fundamentally, we have what we need facility-wise. The other thing I think that's really hopefully going to work in our favor, I think Coach Johns can be a really big key to our recruiting, right? He ran a great AAU program. I'm seeing all these guys come into the portal who are highly touted guys that are getting sub 5.5 point per game and sub 15 minutes per game going to the portal from A-10 schools, you know, Power 5 schools, like all these places that, like, they're good talents. If Coach Johns can bring these guys in and just give them the minutes and have them go run the show, I feel pretty good. And obviously, if we can get his son here too, that'd be a cherry on top.
Yeah, I saw him on Fox. I saw him on Fox Sports.
Really?
Yeah, that's right.
He was on some it's like an AAU show or something like that.
Yeah, it was like grassroots something. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, what? No way.
Yeah, he won the Peach Jam, which, like, it's no joke. Like, you saw that documentary. Mm-hmm. Like, that is some of the best competition out there for that level, like the high school, you know, prep school level. And, well, I guess AAU. And, yeah, there's some big names out there that, you know, he's coached, the program has had, you know, like I said, even his son. Like, if you can get that one guy, and I don't know how far I should be going or not on Twitter with tweeting at some of these guys from a violation standpoint.
14-year-olds.
Maybe I'll stop at compliance on my way out the door. But, you know, I need these guys need to know, like, look at the portal right now. It's filled with guys at mid-majors who have showed up and guys at big schools that haven't showed up, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some in between, don't get me wrong. But, like, if you go to one of these big schools, like, he's looking at, like, Ole Miss and Wake Forest and some of these other big schools, awesome. Like, if you get a shot off the jump and you're the guy and they trust you, cool. But if you don't, there's going to be a 3-star, 4-star coming in right behind you. There's probably a 3-4-star in front of you, right? Like, you know, if you come to a Fairfield and you make a name for yourself, like, why wouldn't you want to be like a C.J. McCollum or a Dame Lillard or a Steph Curry?
I mean, even
know?
In recent years, like, the amount of smaller school guys I've gotten noticed, like, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Like, compared to, like, years ago, I feel like every year you find someone from some random school going in the first round.
Well, everything's on TV.
Everything's streamed on TV now,
right? Like, and yeah, social media enhances it too, right? Like, who cares if you're at Fairfield anymore? Every single game's on ESPN3. You can watch it. And then you get a handful of games on ESPNU, and you play your out-of-conference, and sometimes those are on FS1 and other places. Like, you know, it's really not that bad of a deal if you want to be the big fish in the small pond.
I mean, look at Ja Morant even 2 years ago, Murray State. Like, you, a couple years ago, you'd be insane to think a top 3 pick's going to become from Murray State. Like,
yeah.
But, I mean,
plus, I mean, if you
show out.
The next guy who takes Fairfield to the tournament will be a legend for Fairfield.
Forever.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
One final thing I wanted to ask you.
Yeah,
it'll be a quick answer before we get out of here.
No.
Because I know I see you tweeting about this, so, and I've seen you talking about it. So I know yesterday Rich Enzor was saying, like, there's probably going to be a new team in the MAC next year.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said in that statement that there are MAC teams that are, like, looking, exploring their options on leaving.
Yeah.
So what is your take on that? Because I know you've kind of followed that a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good question. So this rumor started about probably in the fall before – this influx of teams that went to the CAA at our level, at least, right? Like, there's been moving and shaking. Like, it's all a domino effect, though. Like, what is it, Texas and Oklahoma
going
in 26 are going to SEC, and then it's just, like, feeding up, right? It just continues.
Yeah, because someone has to take their spots, and someone has to take those guys' spots.
It keeps moving up, and then, like, D2, D3 schools turn into the fold to D1, right? So it's, like, it's kind of annoying because then, you know, 360 schools becomes 400 soon.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at the same time, good for, you know, athletics to continue to grow, whatever. Yeah. So, for us, at least, at our level, you know, JMU was the first domino to fall. Like, they went to the Sun Belt, right? Or they're going there, I believe, for football. And the CAA, I thought, was going to bring potentially two South, two North, and, like, have, like, 12, I think it was, like, 12 teams or 14 teams or something, right? And I'm like, okay, 12's kind of big, 14's kind of big, whatever. But I'm hearing reports that the CAA might do 14 or 16 or more. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, for one bid, that's a big conference.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, you have to split into two divisions almost at that point.
And I was going back and forth with a guy from Northeastern, who Northeastern's already in the CAA, and he was saying that eventually they'll probably set up these two as North-South and then maybe try to break them into two conferences so that they get two bids or something. Who knows? Like, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, and, but then at what point, like, why are you the CAA? Why aren't you, like,
just your own conference?
Colonial North, Colonial South, mm-hmm. different conferences? I don't know. Anyways, I'm a little worried if Fairfield joins because it's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And the money, the budget is going to have to increase. You're going to have to, I mean, we obviously have the facilities, but we're going to have to increase the budget for recruiting. You're going to have to get a different level of recruit. You're going to have to travel more. Like, I think there's some good to it, but time will tell if it is good or if it just kind of keeps us in the same spot, mm-hmm. which is, you know, what do we finish this year? Seventh?
Seventh.
Yeah, yeah, so like middle, second half of the conference, right?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, there's probably another team or two going to the CAA. I've heard, you know, I got tweeted yesterday that Fairfield was talking about the American East, but I flushed that out. I don't think that's true. American East is all public schools. I don't think Fairfield wants to play in that zone. Yeah. At least the CAA brought in some private schools and smaller schools, like size-wise to us,
mm-hmm.
That would make sense. Like, you don't want us going against Goliath every single, you know, conference game.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I'll say is we have, you know, Fairfield has initiatives to be bigger, right? Mm-hmm. We might be a certain size right now, but, like, when I was here, it was 3,600 kids. It's at, like, 5,000 now. So, like, that shows you in, like, you know, I graduated in 2013. So, like, from then to now, almost 10 years, you know, it's grown a pretty significant amount, and they want to keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're trying to position the school in the right way. I think the CAA is probably a good call. It's just tough because of how many schools are going there. And to fully answer the question you had is, you know, there's rumors of a Bryant, but I heard that they might be going to the American East, so I'm not sure if they're coming to the MAC. I heard Merrimack maybe. I heard Wagner potentially. Like, it all depends. Like, I don't think the MAC is going to keep it at 10 for next year. I think they're going to try to get to 11 or 12, but it all depends on what dominoes fall and when. Like, we're getting, I mean, once the tournament's over, and if Fairfield doesn't hear anything by the end of April, I don't know how you could be in a new conference next year.
Yeah, I think it'd be a rash decision to move now, I feel like. I mean, I get that they want to – they have, like, probably a 5-10-year plan that, like, they're going to get bigger, so, like, it makes sense to be in the CAA, but I probably wouldn't if I were them, I guess.
Well, the other part that's tough, too – well, one other thing is they took all football schools, like, at this, like, what, December, January time frame, mm-hmm. because football obviously starts sooner.
Yeah,
like, we don't care about football, right? So, like – and we already are actually in the CAA for lacrosse, too. So even if they announced it and somehow we wanted to get blocked from a spring sport – you know, we're already in the CAA, so it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyways, I don't know. I'm a little torn on it, right? Like, after all this publicity from St. Peter's, you know, they're going to be put in a better spot than they started. You know, Patino still is at Iona. As much as Monmouth leaving, Monmouth fans, and I love those guys who run the podcast, but, you know, they think it's a big hit to the MAC, but they were here for 7 years. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't a beginner. Like, they weren't a starting program, right? If, like, we still have the core that was here, the core that has some sort of juice against each other, right? Rivalries. That's the other thing that would be annoying with the CAA. Like, who's our rival?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do we hate Hofstra? Do we hate Stony Brook, which is awkward because Jay used to be there?
Yeah.
Like, do we hate Northeastern just because they're Boston? Like, who do we hate, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that all starts new. But I don't know. We'll see. I think overall it's exciting times with a new arena, potentially a new league, and I always think recruiting's my favorite. This time of year, as much as, like, I miss watching games, I love recruiting. If I can have a job and just recruit college basketball, I would do that. I love this, like, portal and high school recruiting stuff.
Awesome.
It's the most hopeful time of the year for everyone.
I know. Yeah. That too, right? Like, at least I have some hope, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a Yankees fan, but I feel like a Mets fan when I'm being a Fairfield fan.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you want to leave off with just about next year or anything, any other outlook?
No. I don't think so, man. I think that's it. I'm looking forward, hopefully, seeing a lot of people in the stands the first year at the new arena.
Yeah. I think we're going to end the show there, too, as well, because we went all the way to about 50 minutes as well. A lot of good stuff. Thanks for joining the show, Frank.
Of
Obviously,
course. Anytime.
Always welcome whenever you want to hop on and, you know, spread some insight. So. It was awesome. I hope everyone out there listening enjoyed it. Jack, any final words?
Thank you for coming on. Good time.
Yeah, of course. Right. Thanks, guys.
Hopefully we get some interviews down the road, some other people on the show as well as we kind of close out our senior year here. And very excited for next year, and I hope you guys all are as well. So thanks for listening. It's been Red Sea Radio on WVOF 88.5. Catch us again next week, Wednesday at 2 p.m. or anytime on streaming services. We'll leave you off, as we always do, by saying, go Stags.
Thanks for listening to Red Sea Radio. To get in on the conversation, follow us on Twitter at Red Sea Radio. Make sure to follow Frank as well to keep up with the latest Fairfield basketball news at FFLDFrank. Thanks again to Frank for joining the show, and thank you to the listeners for following along. Until next week, we leave you off by saying, Go Stags!